Science and technology. I have to tell you, at the beginning of the year when we published this space-based economy as the wrap-up, mm-hmm. I said to myself, Joseph, you know, this is really pushing the envelope. It's very forward. And then, in fact, what happened was we've seen for the first half of the year and very much in the second quarter just an explosion of space everywhere.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's all over. In fact, I spent this week's blogs, we're recording this on the 28th, I spent most of this week's blogs talking about space-based or related stories. The space stories have been incredible. I think I mentioned in the first part of the interview the fact that India had just concluded a blistering round of launching satellites. And I think we'll get into it, but I just want to clue people in that there's a big geopolitical game going on right now regarding space, and we'll get into it as we proceed.
Well, the thing I find fascinating is if you take all the Asian space programs and count up how many people are working in them.
Yes.
And then you look at the explosion of space startup companies in Asia.
Yes.
It's extraordinary. I mean, the reality is Asia can produce far more engineers far faster than we can.
Yes, absolutely. Right now, you have a very interesting situation that's been emerging. Let's go all the way back to a month before the Chelyabinsk meteor incident in Russia. A month before that incident occurred, the Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev gave an interview on Russian television where he stated that, you know, Russia should press internationally for international cooperation in the creation of a planetary asteroid defense system, but that if it couldn't get that cooperation, it should press ahead with its own system of detection and defense against asteroids anyway.
Wow.
Then you had, yeah, wow. Then you had the Chelyabinsk meteor incident. The Russians rammed through their Duma a bill to create a Russian system for asteroid detection and defense. They've been bringing that system slowly online over the past year, if you've been following the stories. Then you have countries like India launching this blizzard of satellites. The European Space Agency, just this last week, I've got a blog coming up beginning tomorrow. It's a three-part blog. The European Space Agency has come out with a plan to position a new international space station at the equigravisphere, the neutral point of gravity between the Earth and the Moon. Yeah. So in other words, this thing would be much closer to the Moon than it would be to the Earth, as a platform for further space exploration, for lunar exploration. Dmitry Rogozin of Roscosmos, the Russian Space Agency, has come out with a plan for a permanent Russian colony on the Moon, you know, starting the construction robotically and so on. China, as you've pointed out in your outline, is wanting to develop a mission to Mars by 2021. You've got, in this country, very interesting, very peculiar things happening in space. And let me give you two examples of what's been happening. And I blogged about this. A few weeks ago, General Kinney spoke to, I think it was the U.S. Air Force Academy, and he said that the soldiers of the future are going to have to be prepared to fight, and these are his words, little green men, okay?
Right.
And I read that.
He didn't
that
mean
I thought,
leprechauns either.
He didn't mean leprechauns, and then I got, you know, I thought, well, that's interesting. I got a bunch of comments about the blog that I wrote about it. Well, that's just code in the military for Russian Spetsnaz units in the Ukraine, okay? And my response was, no, that's not code for little, you know, Russian Spetsnaz units in the Ukraine. That's code for little green men in the colloquial sense. A four-star general of the United States Army, you know, knows what that phrase is going to mean popularly, all right?
Right.
You've also seen U.S. Army recruiting films. I include this in the blogs that start tomorrow about the space story. Include now scenes from films of soldiers fighting aliens, all right? And then it ends its recruitment ad with a reference to the movie Independence Day. So space is definitely in the news. Now, also in the news, space-related, has been now studies that are taking place, and I find this tremendously interesting, Catherine, in view of the geopolitics that we just got done discussing in part one, and here's why. They're doing studies now of what the government system should be for permanent human colonies on Mars.
Right.
And the studies are being conducted in the Netherlands, I think largely under the auspices of the European Space Agency, which means France and Germany, of course. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about the study is that it concludes that in order for there to be a workable, viable system of governance, you're going to have to endow it with a great deal and measure of sovereignty. In other words, you can't have a bunch of people back on Earth in Houston or Kazakhstan or wherever beaming up instructions, you know.
Centralization is not going to work on a multi-planetary basis.
Centralization is not going to work here. That's right, basically.
Right.
And it goes so far, this article goes so far as to say that, you know, a permanent human presence on the moon, you know, Japanese and Brazilians and Indians and Russians and Germans and French and Americans, a colony like that is eventually going to come to consider itself Martian.
Right.
Rather than their nationality that they're from on Earth or what have you. And then the real fun begins.
Right.
So I'm looking at all these developments, Catherine, and I tell you what my gut instinct and intuition here is. Space is proceeding so rapidly now. As you point out, the Asians are simply outnumbering us in terms of engineers that they can produce. You've got three working space programs, very good ones already, in India, China, and Japan, all right? And particularly, again, the Japanese are the ones to watch. They're the quiet ones, but, you know, they've got the technology. You know, they put that big satellite up that was about as big as a school bus, you know, orbiting the moon recently and sending back all sorts of interesting pictures, which the Japanese defense ministry promptly classified. So that was a little signal. You look at this story and the ESA's plans, the Chinese plans, the Indians launching this flurry of satellites in a week. You look at all these stories, and what it appears to me that you're watching is you're watching Mr. Global attempting to project their plans or shift the basis on which they want to impose their centralization plans into space. And what is happening is you're looking at the response from the non-American space agencies clamoring to get up there as fast as they can. This is what I think this Indian satellite business is all about. This is what I think the Roscosmos announcement is all about. And that was the clue, because Rogozin in Russia said, well, you know, this is our plan, but obviously we can't afford to compete with NASA. They're so far ahead of us. So what Russia is announcing there, what Rogozin is very cleverly saying is, we're doing this to position ourselves with the other space powers, to insist that space is not going to be a unipolar thing. This is where you're going to see the geopolitics change significantly, because mm-hmm. space is going to be where Mr. Global and his centralization plans are going to be ultimately challenged. And you see this reflected in these plans for Martian government and this idea that they're going to create a local tribunal of representatives from the countries
Although,
that have people there.
You know, I will tell you what I believe is I believe the reason that we, you know, kicked off the Uruguay round of GATT and globalized mm-hmm. was that the number one goal was Mr. Global needed much more capacity, much faster,
yes.
if we were going to become a multiplanetary civilization. And
yes.
I think that is Mr. Global's number one priority.
Yeah, I do too.
Right.
I do too. And I'll tell you something else that I think is a key factor here, although it's so out there and it's so on the end of the twig of high octane.
That's okay. Be out there. Be out there.
Okay. Well, I think they're in a hurry for a reason.
Yes.
I think they know something that they're not telling us, and that they've been kind of quietly hinting at it and suggesting it in statements like General Kinney with the Little Green Men and the U.S. Army
recruiting. So here's my vote for what they're worried about. I have a number one and number two.
Mm-hmm.
I think the number one threat is geophysical. It's the deterioration of the magnetic field.
Yes.
And I think the number two is the Little Green Men.
Yes. Yeah. I would flip that. I would say my number one concern that I think they're concerned about is the Little Green Men. And number two, the geophysical deterioration. Although I have suspicions about what that geophysical deterioration is all about. I don't think it's natural or cyclic. I think this is something that they've been up to.
You think it's the Little Green Men?
I think it's because of the Little Green Men. Yeah, the chemtrails and spraying, you've got to remember that a lot of that stuff is particulate heavy metal. So what they're doing, it looks like to me, is they're increasing the electrical cavity of the Earth's atmosphere. And that means two things. They're trying to create a kind of an artificial shield in case, you know, the magnetic field gets so weak that it collapses. I don't think so. I think that's simply cyclic. I think the real reason is that becomes a much better conductor for electromagnetic weaponry purposes. They're weaponizing the planet, if I can put it bluntly.
Right.
I think that they're aware of something that they're not telling, and they're in a big hurry to get out there, and this is the reason why they want their asteroid detection and defense system. That's really an excuse to weaponize space in a in a major way. And I think they're in a hurry to get to Mars and back to the moon, because those are from a purely military point of view, those are the bases you would need for any sort of workable interplanetary defense system, especially if you've got something that you're expecting coming from the outer solar system or from outside the solar system. This is what you'd want. So I think you're looking at that behind the scenes, and I realize that's quite a whopper doozy of high octane.
Well, the whopper doozy of the quarter, if you were going to have something really far out, was the Islamic pronouncement that encouraging people to travel to Mars was against Islamic doctrine, and they declared a fatwa on Mars space programs.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, talk about being backward. If you want to be left behind, then yeah, have your medieval, barbaric, unreconstructed, unreformed religion. Did I just say that? You know, don't hold back, Joseph. Tell us what you really think.
Well, but remember, we're talking about a part, you know, because I have to tell you,
yes,
I've
exactly.
met many advanced, wonderful, fantastic, devout.
Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and they have scientists and mathematicians as well that would think that's just nuts, you know.
we're talking about the radical groups seated by U.S. intelligence agencies.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
It's a nice way to keep potential competition on the ground.
Right. So let's turn to blockchain, because blockchain is something I've spent a fair amount of time trying to understand in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. I don't pretend to have mastered it. I think that the impact of blockchain on the financial system is going to be quite extraordinary. We're talking about a system of technology that can create a distributed ledger system. And so literally, you have financial institutions all around the world that can simply settle with each other directly with no intermediaries or payment systems.
Right.
It's one of the reasons I used the quote from the head of ING that said, you know, our customers need banking services, but they don't necessarily need banks.
Yeah, and there's no opportunity for malfeasance there, is there, with a distributed ledger?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, there are many people who believe in this technology who think it's totally encrypted and it's safe, which, you know, I'm of the view that Mr. Global doesn't like technology out of the lab unless he's got a back door, so.
Right. Right.
I don't believe that it is truly encrypted. I think there's going to be a backdoor.
Well, I do too, and I don't, you know, the whole idea, when you first told me of that this is a distributed ledger, that just sent my suspicion meter into the red zone. Because I think ultimately, especially in terms of this idea of a hidden system of finance, I think ultimately a financial system has to be dependent on the actual physical movement
right.
of a physical medium of exchange. I think this is how they've managed that hidden system of finance. But the problem here that bothers me in conjunction with space is I think, too, what, as you've suggested, is what they're doing is with this competition, they're trying to build out systems redundancy as fast as they can, because
yes.
relying on NASA, you know, relying on the unipolar approach to things just hasn't worked. You know, if anything, NASA, since the end of the space shuttle program, has just been kind of a moribund do-nothing institution. You're seeing this redundancy built into the system, and I think that's for a reason. You build redundancy into the systems for one simple reason, and that's either catastrophic failure or military interdiction. And the way it's, especially when you consider India's sudden flurry, it's looking to me like they're building redundancy into the system because they are expecting one of those two things. So
right.
that's, you know, blockchain.
But here's the thing. If you need, for economic reasons, if you need to decentralize, then
right.
having all the data in your cloud is the way you maintain central
sure.
control while you're decentralizing.
Yeah, well, the other thing I think they're doing this for is precisely for space-related reasons, because if you're going to have permanent human colonies on the moon or Mars, you've got to have some sort of system of financial clearing with
right.
a distributed ledger that will allow you to conduct trade and commerce over those great distances. So I think this is a part, you know, part and parcel, as you put it in your outline, I think this is part and parcel of why you've got to look at all of this in toto rather than, you know, this is not really connected to space and space isn't really connected to that. I think you're looking at two halves of the same coin here. I think this is precisely the reason that they're experimenting with these systems. They need it for space and for commerce to be conducted.
Right. So let's turn to health, because health and what's happening with technology in the health area is very significant. We saw in the second quarter a huge brouhaha. In the first
yes.
quarter, Trump had brought up the issue of heavy schedules in the relationship to autism, but we then
right.
saw Vaxxed, the documentary spiked by the Tribeca Film Festival, then
yep.
Robert De Niro giving powerful interviews on TV and the documentary taking off.
Right.
And this all coming on top of a real push to mandate vaccines in the schools, including in California.
Yes.
And so we really see both on the biotech side and on vaccination side, health issues really coming to the fore. All at the same time, we're dealing with the Obamacare reengineering. And as you and I both know, it ain't working.
No, it isn't.
So something's going on in the area of health freedom. And to me, if we blow up anywhere over the next year, this is where it's going to be.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think you as well know people personally that have had either they've had people in their family or they know close friends that have been struggling with an autistic child and meeting the bills. You know, I've had personal experience with people like that have been on various medications and dependent on the government. And my
right.
favorite example here is I used to have a friend that required medical marijuana, and this individual had a prescription of I think 30 pills or something like that a month. It cost $1,700 for that bottle of pills to get medical marijuana in a form acceptable to the government, when a $50 bag would have done
right.
him just as much good. So in other words, I think the vaccine issue here really boils down to big pharma and mercantilist policies and the fear porn on television and radio of this flu vaccine and that flu vaccine. You know, it was swine flu 1 year, it was bird flu the next year. Get your vaccine. And I'm one of those people that never does, and I don't get the flu. And I look at the people that get the vaccines, and they're sick for a few days, and then they're tired, and then they're run down. No, autism and the vaccines, as far as I'm concerned, Catherine, there is a link. I don't think you can be informed about the literature and not come to that conclusion. Putin is raising this issue, and when you start mandating these vaccines for little babies, no. And requiring it for attendance at school, no. And again, this is where the states are going to have to stand up and just say no. And if your state's considering it, move to another state. It's time to get out of that state if they take away your sovereign right to have...
Well, that's the question. Will a state assert, you know, will a state governor play a Putin and say, okay, GMOs, vaccines, we're gonna offer a choice?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think, again... States are going to have to say no to Washington and to the big corporations. And they're going to have to understand that the corporations, you know, particularly Monster Santo, as I like to call it, or IG Farben Santo, are going to come after them. We saw this happen in Hawaii. We see it happening with Vermont. But again, it's time for people to hold the feet of the politicians to the fire. And it's time to re-regulate those agencies and make sure that they have some teeth and require that the people that are staffing them they're not a revolving door between Archer Daniels Midland and the FDA and so on and so forth. Enough is enough. We need to
I should point out for the people who don't know that part of the Vax documentary is a CDC whistleblower who comes out and gives testimony to the fact that the CDC has been manipulating and suppressing data.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
That's very bad. I would also point out during this quarter, the global life expectancy increased, but it decreased in the United States.
Yep. So much, so much for our healthcare. but no, seriously, this is where the states are so important, or, if you're in Canada, the provinces, because.
Right.
The whole reason the United States is behind and wanted the EU was it was much better for us to manage and deal with one bureaucracy than several. Well, it's the same thing with corporations and the federal government here. They don't want states to have say-so because it's easier for them to deal with the government, a centralized government. But, they're not going to look out for the health of your children. They're going to look out for their bottom line. And that is the bottom line. And again, you can't have a functioning economy if you don't have trust and if you don't have health. Real
one
health,
of the reasons the realtors and the home builders wanted me fired from FHA is I insisted on delegating a huge amount to the field offices because I said, look, all real estate is local, and they wanted a national policy on everything.
Yep.
Because it made their life much easier. It was very convenient.
Exactly. Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, zero integrity systems. This, as you know, it's become an obsession of mine because as you read the business literature and the corporate literature, you have a whole world of functions that are planning on using digital systems in the cloud to execute and re-engineer every function, almost every function in our lives.
Yeah.
And yet, if you look at the cost of cybercrime and the growth of cyber hacking, the systems have absolutely no integrity.
No, they don't. And I'll tell you something very interesting in respect to that. Russia, I just had a blog on my website called Russia to Develop Teleportation Technology in 20 Years. This is part of a strategic study plan for Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they want to do is beef up their cyber industry. They want to beef up their cyber hardware and software industry. And I suspect the reason why is that they know that the Western systems, they have some of the best hackers in the world in Russia. They know the Western cyber systems are not secure. And I can I deal with computer problems that are so bizarre, they can't all be coming from my computer. This idea of having everything in the cloud. You know my philosophy on e-books. They are me an abomination because they change the author's intended formatting of a book. The only canonical, I don't trust Amazon to preserve the intention of my text.
Right.
I don't trust any bank with executing trades or billing me automatically. I'm still a paper check guy, and I refuse, you know, cut your bills by 35% if you sign up for our automatic debit system. No way. I'm not letting anybody into my accounts.
Right.
It has to have
actually,
a piece
I
of
trust
paper
my
bank.
I use paper checks, but I do trust my bank.
Well, I trust
but
my
I bank.
But I bank
in one of the smallest banks in America.
Yeah, I bank with a very small bank. I don't bank with a large bank. I will not use electronic debit and so on and so forth. I mean, I'll use a debit card, but that's not what I'm saying because I simply don't trust these systems because, like you, Catherine, they have no integrity. And this brings us back to that blockchain story. Are we really given the malfeasance that we've seen perpetrated by Mr. Global and the corporate fraud and the corruption that we've seen in the last 30 years, are we really going to trust that kind of system with our money?
I don't. What I'm always astonished by is the number of technology people who come to me and say, look, this is a serious alternative. It's safe.
No, it's not safe. There's no unsinkable ship.
Right.
You know, this we heard this more than 100 years ago with the Titanic. God himself could not sink this ship. And, well, you know, you're tempting fate when you say things like that, folks. You know, there have been unsinkable ships, there have been invincible weapons, and there's always a way around them. There is no
so
such thing.
So this brings me to what I think is one of the most important stories right now of what is happening today, and that is, I linked to a story called Why This Golden Era of Innovation Isn't Improving Productivity. Basically, what we're saying is we have all this dazzling technology, and all it's doing is helping a few people centralize and creating enormous inequality. It's destroying trust, and of course, it's destroying productivity.
Yeah. Well, again, you can't. You know, I saw in your outline that you also had articles about Anonymous and other groups cyber hacking central banks.
Right.
You know, and just a year or so ago, it was Sony. These systems are not secure, what they're doing is, as you say, they're creating a lack of trust. And when there's lack of trust, what do? You hoard the money.
Right.
So the technology isn't helping us here. There has to be a way of getting through to people that good old-fashioned paper checks are not a bad thing. You know, the Federal Reserve tried to move us in this digital direction when it quit sending our canceled checks back to us. You know, well, we'll send you copies if you ask for it. Yeah, right. No. It's not creating trust. It's not generating productivity. What it's doing is it's generating distraction.
Right.
And this is what bothers me about it, Catherine. I refuse to have a cell phone or an iPad or anything like that because it's just one gigantic distraction. Social media is just a gigantic distraction for the most part. People have to get away from the tube, get away from their iPads, read a book, paint a picture, make a widget in your garage and sell it to your neighbor, you know. Do something rather than quit being passive. This technology
is killing us. We've been working again this year on our garden. You know, if you need a hobby and you enjoy it, building a local food supply is a really great investment right now.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
You don't want to end up like Venezuela.
No, we don't.
Okay. Well, let's turn to the big questions because
Now, folks. Now we're doing the big questions.
Well, so you know, I described the campaign this year as the Richmond Valentine campaign after the Silicon Valley billionaire character in the Kingsman campaign who used entrainment technology. And you know, and I keep asking the question, who or what does Richmond Valentine want? Because you're seeing, in all the divide and conquer games, you're seeing America's confidence in its institutions at near an all-time low.
Oh, yes.
And that's why I keep asking the question, is the goal to break up the country? Because, you know, if we add up all the different things we're talking about, whether it's, you know, autism at the current rate growing to one out of every two children by 2032, what's happening with the food supply, what's happening with the systems, what's happening with robotics and employment, you know, the question is, where is this all headed? Mm-hmm. You know, who or what does Richmond Valentine want?
Well, you put it, you couched the question in terms of a breakup of the country. I think what Richmond Valentine wants is he wants greater centralization, and at the same time, he wants to bust the country up into much more digestible, manageable pieces.
Right.
And by that, I would mean not just individual states, but, if you will, city states.
Right.
They want to bypass the states as much as possible. They want
right.
to make everything centralized at the federal government level and then lock everybody into their city-state. And that, to me, I think is what they want. And they don't want productivity. That group of people don't want productivity, because when you have productivity, you have creativity, you have imagination, you have critical thinking, and, you know, they can't stand any of that stuff, because when that happens, they're not controlling it. So that's what I think they want. I think they want to keep people poor. I think they want to keep people distracted with their iPads and not producing anything.
Right.
I think they want to keep people distracted by transgender bathrooms and is little Susie or Mark, you know, at 7 years old, do they identify as a boy or a girl? You know, nonsense like this.
Right.
Because any focus on the issues is dangerous for them, because they're stupid. They're arrogant and they're stupid.
Well, there's no doubt that playing in a rigged system can make you really stupid. Although,
oh, yeah.
You know, in my experience at the top, the operational capacity is quite good. So, but two things, that brings us to two questions, which is the future of cash and the future of income.
Right. I don't see, Catherine, how you can have, you know, I'm old-fashioned maybe, and maybe I don't get it, but I don't see how you can have a functioning economy without a real physical medium of exchange. Like I say, I do as much of my financial transaction by paper as I can.
Right.
And, you know, that includes, if necessary, writing a check at the grocery store rather than using a debit card. But I'm just a believer in having physical media of exchange. And physical media of exchange, as far as I'm concerned, are based on production. There has to be value represented more than just aircraft carriers and drones and bombs. And that's been the problem. You know, the backing
right.
the backing of our dollar is military power and nothing more,
right.
nothing less. You have to have a physical medium of exchange. This idea that everything is going to be cashless and so on and so forth, no, I've never gone along with that. I think you have to have money. You have to have physical, tangible securities. You can't trust a bank to keep everything in its vault and on its ledgers in the form of
right.
electronic blips. And let's be honest here. What happens tomorrow if China decides to take out America with an electromagnetic pulse weapon? Our computer systems are fried.
You better create a local currency as fast as you can.
Bingo.
Bingo.
Bingo. You better save those bank deposit slips that have your bank's name on it with, you know, your account number and
right.
your balance. You know,
right.
I save those things
right.
because, you know, I don't trust these institutions. I mean, I trust my little credit union here where I live, but in general, I don't trust these institutions. And it's time that, you know, we get back to the old Jeffersonian principle that you look to yourself and trust yourself first and be skeptical of other other people, you know, watching out for your best interest, because they're not going to do it. I'm firmly Adam Smith in that camp. But you have to have physical media. And if that happens, as you say, you've got to have a means to create a local currency real fast. Absolutely. And it's got to be a physical media of exchange.
The Swiss rejected the proposal to give a basic income to every adult and child. Now, I know they do have a basic income for retiree age.
Right.
So there is some form. But you see enormous conversations globally about artificial intelligence and robotics and what it's going to mean to incomes globally.
Right, right. Well, I don't think, again, I don't think that those technologies need necessarily represent the demise of human production. I think we need to start thinking in terms of, well, if these technologies are coming online, that frees us up to do something with our own time.
Right, exactly.
You know,
like go to Mars.
Yeah, like go to Mars or plan how to get there or write a symphony or do something, you know, produce something.
Right.
And enrich the world rather than just being passive before it. I don't see these technologies the way the globalist elites see it as, you know, this just means we're going to have a great big huge population sitting around doing nothing and demanding their check. I think it represents the opposite. I think it represents a tremendous opportunity for creativity if we'll seize it. And
well, but here's
not
what
let
we
them
have to do.
Seize
you
it
have
for
to
it.
Let you have to let capital flow freely.
Yes.
You can't centralize the capital so it all flows to large corporations. You have to let
exactly.
it flow according to market economics so that the people who no longer need to be doing what they were doing have the capital subject to productivity to do something else. Right.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And this again,
and that's what we've done
to...
in this country. We've systematically denied and shut off capital to people who are being, you know, re-engineered out of whatever they're doing, and we've made sure they couldn't get their hands on capital to do something new, or we've made it extremely difficult.
Yep, absolutely. This is where going back to local solutions is prime. Because if the federal government's not going to do this, or J.P. Morgan Chase isn't going to do this, the states and localities should step in and do it. And that goes back to your idea of equity financing again. I think the opportunity is there for that sort of approach if people will recognize it and seize it, rather than let, you know, the government and the corporations dictate to us that how they're going to seize the opportunity. Just go out and seize it.
Here's how the economy
and take it
works
away from
when people get laid off. They can get money from the government to do nothing, but it is illegal for them to access equity capital from their neighbors to create something new.
Yep. That's got to change. You should be able to take that money from the government and be able to, you know, kickstart a business or something and get off the government and assert your sovereignty again. Absolutely.
So one of the stranger things that happened this year was the announcement that the Temple of Baal was an arch was going to go up in Trafalgar Square and in Times Square.
Yep.
And I called you and I said, Joseph, what is this? And we now see the arch canceled in Times Square. Apparently too many hackles were raised.
Yeah. Well, as I told you at the time, that's just the elite declaring who their God is.
Right.
You know, I'll tell you what's going on with the elites that just nauseates me. And that is, I heard a story where Chancellor Merkel and President Hollande came together at Verdun in France. You know, 100 years ago, Catherine, right now, this year, we were fighting World War One, or at least the French and the British and the Germans and the Russians and the Austrians were fighting it. And we were thinking about getting it in. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Verdun and the Somme in 1916 were two of the bloodiest battles in human history. At Verdun, Frenchmen and Germans gave their lives in the hundreds of thousands. And Hollande and Merkel got together for this memorial at Verdun. And the memorial was this typical new, modern, new age, neo-Gnostic celebration of paganism, the occult, the devil, you know, all of this nonsense. And I thought to myself, what unbelievable gall, not to coin a pun, that these two leaders would participate in a ceremony to commemorate Frenchmen who are fighting for their culture and for their freedom, and Germans fighting for their culture, which had nothing to do with the memorial that was given for those men that lost their lives. Nothing to do with that. Whatever we say about Kaiser Wilhelm, he was not a New Age pagan. Whatever we say about Georges Clemenceau, he was not a New Age pagan.
Right.
The elite parades their disdain and their contempt for the Judeo-Christian and humanistic basis of this culture at every opportunity they can. And it's time to tell them, no, go to Mass, or no, go to your Lutheran church, or go to your synagogue, or if you're not inclined to do that, then be a part of that great tradition of Western humanistic culture that is tolerant of its
other
bases.
Or if you
want to
have bizarre occult rituals, fine. Do it on your own time, not
on
our money.
Do it on your own time, not on our money, because you don't represent us. I was thoroughly disgusted and nauseated. When I read that story about Baal, the Temple of Baal arch, that you sent me, I thought, well, they're at it again. They're declaring where their allegiance really is. And their allegiance is destructive of the basic virtues and monuments and traditions of this culture. And they're proud of it, and they flaunt it. And it's time to tell them, no, you don't represent us. Go have your rituals in your local lodge. Don't bother us with it. I saw that hideous ceremony that they had at the opening of that tunnel. And again, I'm thinking, has Europe lost its mind? Have we lost our mind? What is wrong?
Well, it's not just Europe, because this is exactly what got me to leave Washington in 1998. I was trying to get away from the perversion. It was just too unnatural. It was too unhealthy. It was the scorpion and the frog. And I just said, this can't win. This is going to lose.
Yeah.
It's
I have the same feeling whenever I've been in Washington. I avoid the place because I feel that same perverted, unnatural, untraditional,
right.
You know, it's so thick in the atmosphere in that city, you can cut it with a knife.
Right.
It is so, so out there, so bizarre. And they have, you know, they flaunted this in the churches. You know, they've pushed these changes in the churches from their traditional ritual or confessional moorings. They do it at every turn they can, and it's time to call a halt to it. And for those that don't have that kind of philosophical or theological or metaphysical inclination, there's also that great humanistic tradition in Western culture that they're also flaunting. And it's time that these people just be told, you know, knock it off. We don't need another pagan
spectacle. You think Trump's weird.
You think Trump's weird. These people are nuts. These people are just plain nuts. You know, I spent a great deal of time in my 9/11 book reviewing a book by S.K. Bain that examines 9/11 solely from the standpoint of its self-evident occult ritual aspects. And it's a scary book. I mean, just the little bit I reviewed in my book, it doesn't even really skim the surface of his book. But these people flaunt it at every turn. And that means their allegiance isn't with goodness or virtue or trust or anything like that. They feed their own narcissism with this stuff, and it's time to call them out on it and say enough is enough. We're tired of it. Go, you know, if you want to do this sort of stuff, practice it in your lodge. You know, don't bother us with it and shove it in our face. After all, this is supposed to be, you know, freedom of religion. Well, quit pushing this stuff on us at every opportunity. And using our tax dollars to do it. At Verdun, no less.
I posted these stories under the question, economy open or closed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've asked for a couple of years now the question of, is the economy open and closed? Because I have to tell you, if you look at how the markets are behaving, it's behaving much more like an open economy than a closed economy.
Yep.
And the reality is that that at the heart of getting back, you know, if we can't keep financing the drops in productivity with more government debt, and we have to re-engineer to something productive,
yep.
The reality is we have to address the secrecy and the privilege coming from it,
yep.
And wherever all this money is disappearing to.
Yep, so absolutely.
I don't see how you get real structural reform without transparency about what I call the tithe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, planet Earth is behaving like a REIT. We're sending the dividends someplace. Where's it going? And what does that have to do with everything? It's a question you keep asking. I keep asking. I'm just trying to make it a financially fashionable question to ask and discuss.
Well, I think it should be a financially fashionable question to discuss, and I'll tell you why. Somebody has the ledger book.
Right.
Somebody is keeping the account book.
Right.
And I think what's going to need to be done is, in this global movement of revolt against centralist Mr. Global, is the financial question needs to be injected into that conversation, number one.
Right.
And number two, we're going to face what I call the Philippe Labelle moment of history. And just to refresh everybody's memory as to who Philippe Labelle was, he was the King of France that sent out secret orders to his seneschals, to his sheriffs, essentially, that on such and such a time, on October the 13th, Friday the 13th, they were to go raid and arrest the local Templar lodges and seize all their documents and property.
Right.
That's going to be what has to be done. As soon as it's determined where you have to look for who's keeping the ledger, and I've got my suspicions, and I imagine you do too.
What's in the Vatican Library?
Yes. there's well, that's one place to look. Yes, you're going to have that kind of action taken. The ledgers have to be opened, and the truth has to be told. Because I think the other thing that we're witnessing here, Catherine, is I think we're witnessing the self-destruction, if nothing else, of this hidden system of finance. I think it's becoming too obvious. I'm seeing too many financial analysts in the emails I'm getting now that are beginning to question, you know, just what's going on? Why are our predictions not ever coming true?
Right.
There's
exactly.
Something else happening here. And I think the more people can inject that into the conversation, where has all this money been going? Just
right.
Exactly where has it been going? And who has been responsible for handling it? Once people start asking that question, I think things are really going to bust open. I really do.
Yeah, I agree with you, because if the dollar is losing its reserve currency status,
mm-hmm.
then the source of the subsidy to buy everybody off is going away.
Yep.
And that's going to open things up, and it's going to give tremendous power to whoever got the $40 trillion. There's no
well,
doubt about that.
I'll tell you what my suspicion is, how this is going to unravel. I suspect that you're correct, that we're going to see major banking business reform or skullduggery beginning to surface in the next few quarters in Europe. I think it's going to center around Deutsche Bank. And I think
mm-hmm.
once that opens up, I mean, little parts of it have begun to open up. The Italian banker death, you know, that the Italians are very suspicious of, rightly so, in my opinion.
Right, and we've just had the second Zurich insurance executive commit suicide.
Yes, yes. I think this whole thing is connected deeply to this hidden system of finance idea.
Right.
And
right,
I think once this starts to unravel, and I think it's going to start to unravel at Deutsche Bank, it's going to travel like a thunderclap. I think you're going to see some major banks, insurance companies, and so on involved in this. I think as a result of it, I think you're going to see nothing but smiles on the faces of Mr. Putin and Mr. Xi in China. I really do. I think this whole thing is set to come out. Not necessarily in toto. I'm not saying that, but I think there will be enough dots to come out that people who are following the story very carefully can piece together the rest of the story. I think Europe is going to be hugely significant in this respect in the coming months. Absolutely.
Well, it's been an interesting second quarter. Any other thoughts on the third quarter and what you think is coming up?
Oh, boy. Other than that story, I can't think of it. I'm sure the moment we hang up the phone, I'll think of it. But other than that possible, to me, that's the huge story. I think other than this possible beginning of the unraveling of that system, which I think a certain segment, not all of the segments of factions of Mr. Global, but I think the decentralizing faction of Mr. Global will be maybe taking a hand in making sure it happens. Because I don't think they're too happy with the way that Mr. Rockefeller and the other groups have been running things lately.
Well, it's interesting because you point out that there's a real there's going to be a real brouhaha around the European banking system, and I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah.
But the other place that you're going to see a brouhaha is all the plans to increase productivity in state and local government, in healthcare and in education is not working. And I think one of the most significant things that's going to happen in the next quarter for you and me is your book on Common Core is going to come out.
Yeah.
And it's publishing in August.
Yeah.
It's publishing before the election.
Yep.
And if you look at the fury over Obamacare, we see the Republicans coming out with a new plan. The fury over Common Core is exploding from what I see here in the heartland.
Oh, yes.
And I think this push for productivity in this area, obviously it's not going to get more productivity. It's doing the opposite.
Yeah.
But that's coming to a head as part of this campaign.
Oh,
and
it's
your book
come
is going
to
pop out right in the middle of it. So
I could, you know, I hope so. But, you know, the Common Core thing to me is again, all about productivity in a certain sense, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to remove the teacher from the classroom in gradual steps. They're trying to reduce the teacher to merely being a proctor of an exam and a reviewer of texts that the corporations supply, which again to me is just anathema to turn over historiography or philosophy or mathematics to Pearson rather than to people who know their subject matter well and know it from the historical sources. No, this
well,
is
as bad as that
gonna...
is, I think it's much worse that they're trying to remove the IQ from the student.
Well, this too. But that's my point. I believe that intelligence and education are a reflection of a human interaction. So in other words, by, you know, this is really an assault on the teachers' union. This is their way of saying, well, we're really cutting costs. We're cutting down overhead and so on and so forth.
Right.
No, they're not cutting down costs and overhead in the long term, because what they're doing is they're producing a stupid population that's not going to produce anything, and ultimately they're cutting their own throat.
Well,
so,
they're also taking control of a very valuable, from their point of view, commodity.
Yes, exactly.
They're going to have direct access to the kids without the intercession of parents, teachers, or principals.
Right. And no, absolutely not. Ausgeschlossen, as the Germans would say. It can't happen. And I'll tell you, I'm adamant that what the only thing that this is going to produce is it's going to produce a two-tiered society where people who still have enough capital are going to insist on either homeschooling their children or hiring a real honest-to-goodness, old-fashioned tutor, you know, that takes over the direction of someone's private education. That's what's going to happen.
Here's what's happening with all this productivity in the area of government, healthcare, and education. If you look at the cost of having an autistic child or the cost of having a child who is not functional or productive, what you start to realize is homeschooling, growing your own food, organizing with your neighbors to finance a farmer to grow your food, making the alternative arrangements you need is becoming cost-effective.
Yes, yeah.
It's becoming cost-effective to basically as much as possible drop out of the system, because the system is so unsafe and so unhealthy.
You've got
so unworkable. Yeah, and it's unworkable.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. It's going
to
happen.
Not to give anything away, but I wrote the foreword in the book, and when I reached the end, and I said, look, here's the reality. You're going to have to homeschool or send your kids to private school, or, you know, but you can't do this. You can't send them into this system. It is not safe.
No, you can't. It's not safe. It's not educational. You know, talk to any teacher that is struggling in the public educational system to begin with, and then add Common Core on top of it, which is, you know, standardized testing on steroids. And you end up with a system that cannot educate. It's not that it's inefficient or anything. It simply cannot educate.
Right.
So the bottom line for me has always been, you know, this whole thing has been about taking the teachers' unions and throwing them to the winds and replacing them with some yahoo from Pearson that thinks that they're going to teach a subject this way, and it's not going to work. It's just absolutely not going to work.
If you cancel the teachers' unions, it's a lot easier to get your hands on the pension funds.
Yep. Bingo. Bingo.
I hate to bring it all back to money, but...
No, but that is what it's about. It's another, you know, you're exactly right. It's another harvesting mechanism, and it's another layer of surveillance for, you know, for the big corporations, for Mr. Gates. And I'm sorry, Mr. Gates can't design a decent, secure operating system. I've been wrestling with his system ever since I've had a computer, and I'm thinking, this guy's a billionaire? No, this is a typewriter that doesn't work. It's just, you know, the only reason I'm stuck with it is that most of my programs are designed to run on his system. But I have never, ever...
For which the NSA is very grateful, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure they are, you know. And I'm sure all the other intelligence agencies are very grateful to the NSA for throwing in with such a bad system, because it's so easy to hack. You know.
So let me say one other thing about the third quarter. I'm really looking forward to the third quarter. And I'm really looking forward to the third quarter because I know you see this with your members. I have never been in cahoots with more smart, attractive, intelligent people ready to move on and get, you know, and get this, you know, what they see is they see that the current system is not working, and they have finally reached the point where they realize, you know something? It's just like Brexit. You know, I'm seeing in the hearts and minds of thousands of people all around the world, they're just voting to leave.
Yep.
With their time, with their money, they're just saying, I'm out of here.
Yep.
They're checking out.
I have checked out to the degree that I can. You know, I tell people, I have to pay for cable television just as part of my internet and phone package. As soon as corporations offer me the opportunity to get internet and phone without paying for, you know, endless commercials and 500 channels of pawn shops and, you know, and the tripe and swill on CNN and Fox and all of that stuff, as soon as that happens, but I don't have my cable TV hooked up, I don't listen to, I have dropped out to the extent that I'm able from all of this, and trying to create a community of like-minded people and thinkers and doers and creators.
Well, there's just more great people showing up, getting ready to drop into something new.
Yeah. Eventually, out of that is going to develop a critical mass. You know, everybody thinking and doing the same way. Out of this is going to develop a critical mass of people that can get in there and really fix things. Because the current crop are brainless. They're you know, as you pointed out when you came to the visit, they're not only arrogant, but they're stupid. And I'm seeing articles to that effect now. You know, it's amazing. This almost the same day, I had articles from people, from, you know, this commentator in this newspaper or what have you, saying that our political class and our leadership and our financial experts and so on, they're arrogant and they're stupid. And they are. They're arrogant
and
they're stupid.
Well, here's the problem. You know, we have used the official reality so long, we've forgotten what reality is.
Yep.
And the dollar as reserve currency has given us the luxury of doing that.
Yep.
And that is now going to come to an end.
Yep.
And it's the Brits who are delivering the message, and the message is loud and clear.
Yep, it's the Brits that are delivering the message. I think the French and the Italians are going to deliver the message. The message is being delivered all over the world, and
right.
It means that we're going to be forced back on our own resources. And, you know, that's not a bad thing. Because
well, I wish
the
we
bottom
did it 10
line,
years or 20 years ago, but
yeah.
Know, better late than never.
Yep. The bottom line is, go ahead.
You go.
No, well, I was just going to say the bottom line is, you know, it's not a bad thing because what made this country great wasn't money. What
right.
made this country great was creative people.
Right.
And individuals. You know, it wasn't John D. Rockefeller hiring his thugs to go beat up his competition. You know, it's time to take the Carnegies and the Rockefellers off the pedestal. These aren't heroes. These were basically thugs.
Right.
It's time to take them off the pedestal and start revering the people that did create value and did create life and beauty and things. You know, it's time to take those people and give them their due. You know, the Leonard Bernsteins
right.
and the James Michener's and the people that have enriched things. But and I think that's going to happen. I really
well,
do.
Well, if you let the creative, productive people rise and back into the leadership positions, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, the political class won't let that happen, but you know they are. I think to a certain extent, Catherine, because of what's happening at such an accelerated rate, they're as obsolete as the dodo bird. I really do. I think the Zbigniew Brzezinskis and the Dick Cheneys and the Karl Roves and you know all of these people, the Hillary Clintons, the David Rockefellers, and the whole ilk. I think their day is over. I really do. They have produced the Brexit vote. Like I said, it was a referendum on their track record, and their track record is abysmal.
Right.
It's a failure.
I'm afraid you're right.
Yep.
Well, Joseph, on to the third quarter. It's going to be interesting times. And
yep.
And we thank you very much. You're one of the reasons we live a free and inspired life over here at the Solari Report.
Well, thanks for having me back on, Catherine.